fight I'm Nidhi Razdan. Next week, President Trump will be here in India for a two-day visit, which is being watched very closely even before it begins. The visit is certainly high on optics and spectacle, but will it have any real substance? Some say no, but others believe even though there is no trade deal as was widely hoped, there is still a lot to talk about. Trump's daughter Ivanka, his son-in-law Jared Kushner will be part of a high-powered delegation that accompanies the US president here in India. Apart from that, there is the US National Security Advisor, the Secretary of the Treasury, the Commerce Secretary and the Secretary of Energy. All of them are coming along with President Trump. The US Trade Representative, however, will not be coming. He's the one who's been negotiating with Commerce Minister Piyush Goyal for that trade deal, which both sides have put off for now since several differences remain, and they're probably looking at a much bigger deal somewhere down the line. Now, the president and his entourage will arrive in Ahmedabad on Monday. And after a roadshow, Mr. Trump and Prime Minister Modi will address crowds at the newly built Sardar Vallabhbhai Patel Cricket Stadium. This is an event that the government says has been organized by what is called the Donald Trump Nagrik Abhinandan Samiti, which we're still not clear what this committee is and who exactly it is in it and who's paying for this event, but it is supposed to be the world's largest cricket stadium. Later in the day, the president and his family will travel to Agra and then fly into Delhi for formal talks the next day. Now, even though a trade deal is not happening, here is what is. A $2.6 billion helicopter deal for the Navy, which is on the cards. We're also hearing about pacts on homeland security, nuclear power plants, and other things. The security situation in the region will also be high on the agenda. Just today, the United States has announced that it will be signing a peace deal with the Taliban next week on the 29th of February. So that's going to be high on everyone's minds. Meanwhile, Mr. Trump himself is very excited about just how large the crowds are going to be in Ahmedabad when he arrives. After saying that he was told 7 million people would welcome him, he's now taken that number up to 10 million, even though Ahmedabad's population is under 6 million. Let's get opening comments from our panelists tonight. Opening comments for 1 minute each, just on where they see this visit going, whether it is going to be spectacle or substance. India's former envoy to the United States, Meera Shankar, is here. Ma'am, I'll begin with you. Your 60 seconds start now.
Well, I think the security relationship between India and the US is becoming more robust, and we are probably going to see movement there in terms of defense equipment, which we can get from the US, helicopters, both naval as well as Apache, Romeo and Apache helicopters. And we are also seeing the US moving the Congress for permission to provide an integrated air defense system to India. Whether that moves ahead, one doesn't know at this stage. There's talk of a counter-terrorism or a homeland security agreement which will focus on counter-terrorism. This is something we've been cooperating on, and that's become, again, closer and I think more trusting in terms of the way the two countries' agencies are able to work together. On the trade side, clearly both sides have indicated that there's no deal and there are issues.
Okay, so security, defense, counterterrorism, that you believe is going to be the hallmark of this visit and beyond that. Ambassador Casey Singh is with you. Ambassador Singh, will it be all of this or will it be Trump's obsession with the crowd sizes?
No, that's part of it. I don't think we should hold it against him. He looks for a spectacle wherever he goes, so let's provide it to him. But that's the essential thing, is that there is a strategic part of the relationship which has been built up over the last two, three decades. And this can be just one more notch in that. But to think that Trump will think strategically, the experience of Trump over the last 3 years has been, he's very tactical. He has some core beliefs. He relates every policy to those core beliefs. So as far as trade is concerned, it's still balanced trade. So whether the imbalance is only $25 billion, which is 1/12 of the trade deficit he has with China, it doesn't matter. He'll still keep pushing. But I think what he's done in the current case is he's put it aside, because I think at the moment what he needs is election in November. So he thinks this will ramp up his numbers with the 4 million Indians in U.S., persons of Indian origin in U.S. He thinks the numbers will ramp up his thing after his impeachment saga with the Congress. And also, there is a feel-good feeling when you have lakhs of people. They may not be millions.
Okay.
Certainly lakhs of people cheering. Now, whether that feeds back into concrete thing, now buying weapons from them is very good. They want to sell weapons to you.
Sure.
But the question is, how does it relate to the vision stated by Obama?
The first 60 seconds are over, but it's interesting how you have brought in the domestic politics of the United States into this. Sameer Sarin, the president of the Observer Research Foundation, who's just back from Washington, D.C., is with us. Sameer, how important is this visit? It is, I think the eighth meeting between Mr. Trump and mm-hmm. Mr. Modi in the last couple of years. That itself is important.
I think this moment is important for both the leaders, and meeting each other is going to, in some ways, respond to certain questions, certain constituencies that's raised against both of them. So I think in that sense, they're doing the right thing. They're good friends, and you saw in his effusive praise for Mr. Modi, he made it a point to distinguish between the Prime Minister and the country. He was quite clear that it's Prime Minister Modi that he likes, and India hits us with tariff. I mean, that was his description of what he's dealing with. So I think it's a political moment for both of them, and I think both of them are going to be strengthened by this engagement. But let me just go back to the previous two comments, and let me try and put it in a more nuanced way. I think this visit itself is a deliverable. I think what it tells you is that U.S. presidents now need to engage with India. And it is because, obviously, India brings something to the table. I think it is no longer a relationship where it was based on the Americans ceding space, giving favors, currying for certain advantages for India in the global system, but also because India, by its location, by its growth, by its economic size, and of course by its diaspora, offers something, cannot be ignored.
Okay.
I think
it is a
relationship every U.S. president now needs to think about.
The visit itself is a deliverable. We'll be talking about that in some detail because there is an interesting context to that. Zorawar Daulat Singh is an author and foreign affairs analyst, and he joins us. You wrote an interesting piece that you believed that the India-U.S. relationship needs to be, as you put it, sensibly redefined and then pursued realistically, if that could be part of your opening comments today.
So the argument that I made this a few weeks ago is that the entire basis of the India-U.S. Partnership was defined 20 years ago on the basis that a rising India is a valuable strategic outcome in itself for the United States. I think we've seen a retreat from that particular concept in the American strategic establishment. I think we're dealing with an America that's erratic. It's unable to redefine its role. It's retrenching, but it doesn't know how to do so. And if there's been a stable and forward Indo-US partnership in the last 3 years, it's primarily because India has more or less latched onto and even ceded a lot of space to the United States on multiple fronts. We bought a lot of weapons at market prices premium. We made concessions on trade. Geopolitically, the United States is on the verge of crafting a deal with the Taliban in Afghanistan. So despite all the theoretical things that could bring us together, China's one. We've actually seen this relationship in substance not really take off the way it was envisaged 15 years ago.
Okay, all right. Interesting different points of view from our panelists in the studio. And I'm going to open this debate now up to the entire panel. I'd like to go across and first introduce Mr. Raymond Vickery, the former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Commerce and Trade Development in the Clinton administration, who is now a senior advisor with the Albright Stonebridge Group. Sohasni Haider, the National and Diplomatic Affairs Editor of The Hindu, is with us. And Sunil Alag, an independent business consultant, joining us from Mumbai. Mr. Vickery, to you first. Are you disappointed that big trade deal is not happening on this visit, and that do you believe it actually takes away from what could have been a sort of a big deliverable, or do you think regardless of that, the relationship is moving forward?
Well, of course, I'm disappointed that we don't have any kind of real trade deal. There'll be some movement around the edges, but the economic aspect of the U.S.-India relationship is absolutely fundamental to building a stronger relationship between the world's two greatest democracies. What's going on here really is an exercise in mass entertainment. That seems to be the modus operandi both for Prime Minister Modi and for the president. I'm always glad to have U.S. presidents visit India. There have been four consecutive presidents who visited. President Obama came twice. So this is good. But you need to get beyond that, and you need to be able to talk not only in terms of strategic matters, but in terms of trade, economic relations. And the one item that will really be left out, I fear, is values. democratic values, the rule of law, what happens in terms of protection of minorities, how you treat the press, what goes forward in terms of democracy. So I'm afraid that that's going to be completely swept aside by an exercise in mass entertainment. Nevertheless, the bottom line is it's always good to have presidents and prime ministers go back and forth, even if it is under these kinds of entertainment circumstances.
Well, you've actually raised a lot of important points, Mr. Vikari, and I will get into those in just a moment. Let me just take opening comments from Suhasini now. Suhasini Heather, an exercise in mass entertainment for both leaders is how Mr. Vikari put it. And, you know, Suhasini, you've covered all these visits all these years. What makes the Trump visit different and what makes it stand out according to you? Is it that, you know, part of diplomacy now has become the spectacle too of having the big show at the cricket stadium, massaging each other's egos, etc. That's now par for the course.
Well, Nidhi, without being in any way derisive of it, I would say that the spectacle is important, particularly in today's times when leaders tend to be showmen and leaders tend to be strongmen. And Mr. Modi and Mr. Trump are no exception to that. When they stand together there at Motera, they're saying, you know, we're not just leaders of our own countries, we're great friends. And these are two countries that have great people-to-people ties. And they're acknowledging all of that when they stand together. So I wouldn't say that the spectacle is not substantive in that sense. The truth is, if you're looking at the agreements that are right now being outlooked, I don't know, somebody might pull a rabbit out of a hat at the last minute, but we're looking essentially at MOUs and a sort of push to to sign deals just because the president is there. We're not looking at very major substantive agreements between the two when it comes to bilateral agreements. I do think what will be important, whether they discuss them or not, it'll be important either way. One will be the regional context. One will be what India and the US decide to put out as the roadmap ahead for the Indo-Pacific. How far is India willing to go in the US's plan, which has now been very clearly put as a counter-China plan in the maritime sphere. So where is India going to go with that? Are we going to see an upgraded version of the Joint Vision Statement of 2015, for example? The second part is, of course, Afghanistan. Whether India does see a role for itself or not, the timing of this visit is alongside the signing of the Taliban-US agreement, which is planned for February 29th. So I do think it will be an important part of the context for this visit, and it's a question of how far the two sides are able to go on that as well. And since everyone is pointing out that the two leaders are meeting for the eighth time, I do want to make the point, it's interesting that of those eight times that the two leaders have met, five of them have happened in the last 8 months, and three of them happened in the 3 years before that. I think what you're also seeing is that the US, or certainly the Trump administration, is showing right now that they do believe that Prime Minister Modi, having won that re-election, is somebody that they want to deal with very personally and intensively. And they are, in a sense, putting their weight behind not just the Indian government, but the Modi administration.
You can see that in the way the Trump family is coming, the delegation that's coming with the president, you know, despite the hiccups over the trade deal, that they do clearly attach a lot of importance to the India relationship. So it's a question of what our expectations are in terms of outcomes, which is what we're going to talk about. But Sunil Alagh, your opening comments on that. Is there a danger, though, Sunil, that a lot of the focus then tends to just, you know, be on like an Ahmedabad-type event, you know, crowd sizes, and you end up sort of losing sight of the real objectives?
You know, whether it's a spectacle or not, the whole world is moving towards that. Whether you've got Johnson in UK, and if Trump wants a spectacle, that's what you give him. If there's another president who comes who wants to eat Indian food, or eat South Indian food, you take a Chinese guy to Chennai, then that's the game that is going to be played regardless of what anyone says today. And Trump is going to be important because he is the leader of one of the biggest, if not the most powerful country in the world. Now, whether America likes him or whether we don't like him, it doesn't make a difference to anyone. It's America that counts. And I expect a lot to happen in terms of the two leaders when they speak to each other. I expect a lot of knowledge transfer to take place. I expect technology transfer is more important than any of for the industry. And in terms of visas of allowing Indians to go and work in America, these are all little points which many of us tend to gloss over and say, that's not important. And I expect Trump and Modi to actually establish a better relationship, more friendship. Trump and he can have a chat about what's happening in India. They have to understand each other. And even the Taliban thing in Afghanistan. Now, all these are important, especially in respect of what's happening to China in the virus thing. And therefore, India has a great opportunity now to tell Trump, buy from us. You don't have to go to China. So there are many things which are going to take place with Trump around. If he wants a spectacle, Modi gives it to him. And that's it. I mean, that's how you please someone. I mean, don't we at home, we have guests over, don't we take out our best crockery depending upon who's coming? And then you don't expect Trump not to know what's being put up for him. We expect all our guests to know. And yet we do it for the guest who comes. And that's something that we all have to accept and realize.
All right. Well, let me just take some of the points
putting
that have been made to Samir Saran first.
At home itself, you know, you'll put out your best crockery, you'll bring out your...
I don't build walls in my house, but that's another... I don't draw curtains, but anyway. I know what you're trying to say.
I don't want to get into the walls department because...
Well,
there's a lot of debate going on that. And I'm just telling you about the wall thing. It's about 4 feet tall.
Yeah, but,
no, but
I mean,
all Americans know. You think the American ambassador in India hasn't told Trump what is happening? Come on. I mean, like, this is now taking for the purpose of all of you in the media to go ahead and have a little bit of a ball.
You always like shooting
but
us in the
Americans
media. We are
Americans already
good guys.
Know what we are talking about.
Okay,
there's a
okay, satellite
so
give me
on
a second,
top. There are drones
second.
To tell you what's
happening.
Let me
ask Samir this question, which is that, you know, when the Indo-US nuclear deal was this high point, right, in the relationship, and there, is it fair to every time expect... that kind of a big bang announcement from an India-US visit? Is that what we've got trapped in since then? That, okay, nuclear deal hua, uske baad, what next?
No, I think that you're not going to see that kind, that scale of an announcement ever again. Because I think you were resetting your relationship. That nuclear deal was basically an agreement between two countries to now look afresh at each other and begin a new journey together. That was a seminal moment. It was a culmination, or it was the end of 50 years of a certain posture, beginning of maybe a century of another kind of engagement. It's not going to happen again. But we must understand that our relationship is still driven at the very top. We require attention from the leaders. Otherwise, our bureaucracy scatters their attention to more pressing and immediate issues in the neighborhood, domestically, and with perhaps more significant partners on a tactical basis. So the leaders' attention at the very top is extremely important if we want to align our various forces to work together. And I think, therefore, a summit like this is important. I don't think anything great is going to be achieved in 1.5 days. It is the weeks leading up to the summit and a month or two thereafter that we will see real movement in South Bloc, in Capitol Hill, in State Department and in various other ministries. So I think this crowding in of attention for a relationship is important when you are still only the 15th or 14th most important trading partner for a country as big as the US. Now, that's one part of it. But the second part, and I think I want to differ with Raymond Vickery, I think we have the capacity to create bigger spectacles today, and therefore they are happening. But by the way, when Bill Clinton came, he got a spectacle as well. He was dancing, and it was famous photographs of Bill Clinton dancing with the local artisans and craftspeople, the Clinton family going to various other locales. This has happened all the time. Obama did that too. The scale has changed because countries have grown, our ambition has grown, our habits have changed. I'm not saying for the better, but certainly we are delivering to current taste. You and I may not have that particular choice for that palate, but people certainly
do. I have attended many of these diaspora events as a reporter.
But let me just see, this is an election year. Now, for a person who's a germophobe, who hates traveling, who cleans his hands 7 times before he touches his own face, for him to make this long trip on an election tour, in election year, is a significant commitment. Now he is making this because he does believe, certainly after Modi's re-election, that he needs to engage with this leader. And I think Suhasini is absolutely bang on. I think the change in U.S. tack to India in the last 6 months is visible. I think they have put more resources into this relationship, and which is good for us. Now, why should we begrudge that? I think India should be welcoming greater attention. We should use this moment to actually move towards a trade deal. I was telling someone else earlier in the day that it is in India's interest. It is in the smaller party's interest to have rules for trade. Otherwise, whimsically, Americans will choose what they want from us. I mean, they are getting a $2.6 billion agreement on defense.
I want to come to another part of what Raymond Vikri said. I'll take that to Ambassador Meera Shankar first. About the need, as he said, to go beyond the mass entertainment for both leaders. And he, as he fears that issues of democratic values, rule of law, protection of minorities, how the press is treated, all of these kind of then get overshadowed by everything else. Now, it's interesting because in the United States, and you know this better than anyone else here, it's not just the administration that matters. It is also Capitol Hill. It's also the U.S. Congress. And that is where, you know, India has faced some degree of criticism, whether it's about the restrictions in Jammu and Kashmir or the Citizenship Amendment Act. Even today, you have the U.S. Religious Freedom Body again criticizing the CAA. How does India navigate all that at this time?
Well, I think we navigate with the administration because the administration has been relatively circumspect in raising issues which might be troublesome for India. And that's something which we have appreciated. At the same time, we have to engage with opinion across the spectrum in the US, and we have to be conscious that in our policies, we don't, in a sense, do something which cracks that bipartisan consensus which has prevailed so far to build the relationship with India. You know, presidents, whether they were Democratic or Republican, you know, Bill Clinton, George Bush Jr., President Obama, now President Trump, have all sought to strengthen the relationship with India, because when they look at the Asia-Pacific, from where they see their major challenge coming, then India is a very plausible partner for them in this region. So I think it's important for us to ensure that we don't become an issue of bipartisan division within the United States. So a little delicacy and engagement across the spectrum is certainly important, even as we mainly deal with the administration. And here I would point out something in response to what Zoravar said, that you have a US which thinks it is not in its fundamental interest to see India's rise. I would draw a little distinction between President Trump's individual views on some of these issues
and
the establishment's view. I think the establishment's view may not necessarily echo that of the president 100%. And that's a space we have to play in to strengthen the relationship institutionally and to, in a sense, insulate it a little from personal vagaries.
You know, that's very important, Ambassador Casey Singh, because what Meera Shankar was saying there about ensuring that India doesn't become a casualty in the sort of bipartisan support we have enjoyed on Capitol Hill. It seems to me, though, that in the last few months, there is a very real danger of that happening. We've seen the way Democrat U.S. lawmakers in particular have been more vocal in their criticism of India, and the way, the Howdy Modi event, for example, and the Prime Minister's virtual political endorsement, in a sense, of President Trump at that time. So in an election year, is this going to be seen as a continuation of that political endorsement? And what does that mean for us in the long term?
Look, firstly, we must understand the rise of these right-wing populist leaders, whether it's Boris Johnson, or it's him, or it's Netanyahu, it's Mr. Modi, they're breaking convention. They're doing things which have not been done in the past. The breakdown of the bipartisan consensus is in both countries. You've seen the opposition party criticize some of the things which are being done here. And you've seen the criticism in the U.S. Congress. You've seen two congressmen, a congressman and a senator here. Now, what is happening? When Mr. Modi and he undertake this particular series of events, there is no focus, as Mr. Vikri said, brought on the Kashmir issue, no focus brought on the CAA, no focus on Shaheen Bagh. You can say those are ancillary. They don't matter to the relationship. But there has always been the core of engagement between India and U.S., was a sharing of values. And that is why U.S. presidents, even during the Cold War, were drawn to India. Even Eisenhower came here. Even Nixon, etc. Despite whatever they felt, their first thing was to reach out to India because they said, it's the custodian of democratic values, is the counterpoint to China in Asia. Now, that continues. So is it changing? But then again, look at what President Trump has done. He's again backed Netanyahu. He's gone and endorsed a deal which is so far to the right that even the King of Jordan is not endorsing it. In our own election, if you remember, just before the elections, Abhinandan's coming back was not an Indo-Pak act. You saw the tweet coming from President Trump from Hanoi, saying there'll be some news tomorrow. He went to England and he campaigned against, he campaigned for Brexit, encouraging the Britishers to vote for Johnson. So you're looking at new kinds of leaders who are actually interfering in the election processes of other countries. Now, if this was happening here, reverse may be viewed by people in America, that we, because no other US president has come in an election year to India. Normally they come, Clinton came because he had finished his two terms. So he came before the election. Otherwise, presidents generally do not go. But then this is not specific to India. This is something which is now becoming a global thing. So it's leadership driven, unfortunately. And the danger with leadership driven relationships is that it damages then the institutions, institutional engagement. And therefore, one last point.
Yeah.
I disagree that we are where we are not where we were 4 years ago. US tells you to go into Indo-Pacific. They have just been exited from Philippines. The president has denied them now access to their ports. He is leaving Afghanistan. So there is an entirely different approach where he is stepping back and he says, you go into Indo-Pacific, I'll sell you the weapons. It's not the same vision. It's not the vision statement of Obama. It's not something Bush had in mind. So there is a strategic deficiency in President Obama's thinking. It's largely tactical. And he will engage you on whatever interests him. And then the danger is with personalizedness. Supposing he doesn't re-win and you get another president in America.
Exactly my point. Then
you
what
do not put your eggs in one basket. However, you know, as Wilson said, a week is a lifetime in politics.
So Robert, would you agree with that? And on this comment about the fact that India being the world's largest democracy, it's not just US presidents who have highlighted that. I mean, even Prime Minister Modi, I remember when he last met President Trump, the first thing he said was that we are the world's largest democracy, and those democratic credentials is, you know, what he talks about with a certain justifiable degree of pride. But when India's own government is being questioned about those credentials today, how much does that actually impact the relationship, or is it just more transactional because that's the way Trump is?
Yeah, so this I've looked at this a little closely from a historical standpoint, and I think we have been espousing this rhetoric of democracy in a strategic fashion. It's a glue that brings these two countries together. It allows you to brings different sort of political sides together because you can agree upon this one sort of value-based approach. But in practice, we've seen right from the 1950s.
Correct.
I mean, you should have been on the same side. Why weren't you? Because you have incongruent geopolitical interests and visions of world order. You had it then and you still have it now. I still will maintain my line that when you break down the overall US foreign policy in the Indo-Pacific, in Asia, in the subcontinent, I'm not saying you don't have common ground. You may have common ground in China, but you don't know how to operationalize it in a fashion that will help you safeguard your territorial interests, your regional stability. So there is a process of finding common ground. I think where we've seen is a little bit of exuberance, hyperbole, particularly in India, because the United States is getting what they want. By the way, I want to congratulate American policymakers out there. I think we are the biggest success for America today in Asia. We are the most loyal friend, the loyal state. We are upholding the legitimacy of US power in this vast continental space. But now the point is, let's not buy into this argument that we've been getting things out of them. I think it's time to now also be able to have some sort of, maybe you can't have an equal partnership, but get something out of it. I mean, if you're going to pay $6 billion, $1.3 billion for the latest Apache 6 for the army, now you're talking about a massive investment coming into this. So this is not a favor being done to you.
Sameer, before I come to you, that's an important point. I just want to ask Raymond Vickery just to respond to this whole comment that was being made on the shared values as a democracy. In light of what Ambassador Casey Singh was saying in particular about Trump's own personality and how, in a sense, he will do what suits him, what he wants to do, then how much does it matter, you know, what India actually does internally as far as the US is concerned? Though I have to say the State Department has been issuing statements from time to time as well, whether it's on Kashmir or on the CAA.
Well, of course it matters. The reality is that the relationship among nations is not built upon two great leaders and the majority vote at any one particular time. It is a mix of security interest, of economic interest, trade interest, and of values. And so it makes a great deal of difference in terms of being able to address all of those elements which cement a relationship. The idea that you're just going to concentrate on two people at the top and how well they tweet and how well they make speeches is a very short-sighted view. Both Trump and Modi are going to be gone from the scene at some part, at some point, just as all presidents and prime ministers do. So the question is, how do you use these opportunities of interchange to build not only personal relationships, but relationships based upon values based upon economic relationships, based upon security concerns? And it seems to me that what we ought to do is to try to maximize these opportunities on all of these fronts, rather than having mass entertainment eat up all of the other issues.
Let me take that to Samir Saran. And Samir, just this point about the bipartisan support that the India-US relationship has also largely enjoyed. Is it a mistake for us to be reacting aggressively to everyone who criticizes us? Whether it was Pramila Jayapal or, you know, other lawmakers, do we need to find a way to engage with them? After all, we are a democracy. We can take it.
You know, first, let me go to the values part. Americans have never allowed values to come in the way of a good relationship. Let's be very clear. If you thought that the American build their strategic cluster of client states and partnerships and alliances based on values, then you're mistaken. You can just look back. You know, many books have been written about how they have based their relationship. So I think this is kind of over-deployed and misused term. It was a nomenclature that worked for these two partners, and people have used it freely and liberally, but that's not the basis of our relationship. The basis of our relationship, of course, is because the Americans believed that they required a plausible partner, as Ambassador Shankar mentioned. They needed a defender of the liberal system in the Asian continent. They required a big market as their own needs increased. And India was offering them many such offerings. I think our relationship is based on economics, on strategic and political questions. And of course, we have cloaked it with this whole culture and value and people-to-people business, which is true, which, by the way, is true and an important integral part of our relationship. And therefore, coming to your second question, I think our relationship cannot be defined on the Trump presidency. I think that is something that we must understand. The Trump presidency can be used to crowd in, like I said, crowd in greater attention to building a far more diverse set of stakeholders in D.C. It cannot be the end of our relationship. Our relationship, it took us less than a few years after we decided to change the nature of our relationship for us to become good friends, because millions on both sides liked each other. And I think that intrinsic ability to appeal to most Americans must remain a fundamental Indian virtue, and therefore we must engage.
That's what my question was.
I think we must engage. However, just one point. I think both countries are going through a silly season. Both countries are going through a churn where democracy itself is under question, debate, discussion, and contest. I think at this particular moment, we have to sometimes be careful that we do not exaggerate some of the discordant voices we hear from the other side of the aisle. I'm quite confident that come November, if there's a different leader elected, the relationship will continue down the same path with a new president of the United States of America.
So, Hasani, do you just want to weigh in on that before I come back to you? On this issue of shared values and putting all our eggs in one basket, is there a danger that we are doing that?
No. I agree with Samir entirely that whoever comes to power, we will learn to deal with them. Whoever comes to power in India, they will learn to deal with us. If you look at the relationship between President Obama and Prime Minister Manmohan Singh, you would think that two men could not have more in common when they discuss the economy. If you looked at President Obama and Prime Minister Modi, they seem to get on really well as well. So I really don't think that you should make more of just the idea that we will only deal with this particular president and not somebody else who will come to power. And on the issue of shared values, Nidhi, can I just take a discordant note to everybody who has spoken so far and said, yeah, of course they share values. Both President Trump and Prime Minister Modi have shared values. They both speak to the majorities in their countries. They seem to believe in a certain kind of majoritarianism. They seem to share similar ideas about immigration, about migration, about letting people into the country. Mr. Trump had a very religious-specific travel ban. Mr. Modi has a religion-specific citizenship act. When it comes to the treatment of NGOs or the media, I don't think the two have very differing views as to how the media should be treated or how non-governmental organizations should be treated. So, and I'm not being facetious here. I'm saying that the idea of shared values is a moral judgment. It's a value-based judgment in a sense, and we shouldn't make too much of the fact that others might not have the same. I mean, we should actually emphasize that others might have different values that we are talking about. Obviously, when you say shared values between India and the US, you talk about democracies. You speak about openness. You speak about plurality. You speak about the fact that there is a, you know, that they are welcoming of outsiders. But those might not be the values that are shared between the two leaders. They still share those values.
Sunil Alag, interesting take by Suhasini there. Your thoughts?
But I agree with Suhasini to the extent that, look, America all along has only wanted stable governments. They don't care about democracy at all. Look, if there's a stable government in Saudi, that's the one they'll back. If there's a stable government in any country, whether it's a dictatorship or not, doesn't matter to the business out there. This is all talk that, look, we are of values, we are of this, we are of that. But look at the way America has gone. And if India can convince America that we are a stable government, we are a stable country, investors will come. And that's the most important that has to be shared between Modi and Trump. And if Trump doesn't win, the next president. And this talk of democracy is all very good for television. Give me one country that America has backed which is not a stable government. Whether it's dictatorship or not is irrelevant to them. Look, all along, all I'm saying is that we got to have exchange of knowledge. We got to have exchange of technology. This is what business is hoping. And you've got a president who takes decisions there and then, wrong or right. We're not going to get into it.
Okay.
But take advantage of Trump's visit. Tell him what you want. And maybe at the end of it, even though there's no deal on a big trade issue, he will say a number of small things which are important for India. Score all the small victories if you can whilst Trump is here.
Also.
That's what I would look at.
That's not
knowledge transfer, technology transfer is the critical thing.
Will he do the dandiya? We were told we do not know. But you know, Sunil, on a serious note, democracy or talking about democracy isn't just something for television studios. I think too many of us are taking
that democracy is also there. I'm not
step into our neighborhood and see what it's like. I think too many of us take it for granted. Ambassador Singh and then Zoravar and then back.
No. We do have elections. Modi is losing. One second. Nidhi, I will tell you, Modi's lost a number of elections already.
All the state elections are going the other way. Let me just get
so we are a democracy. There's no question on that.
Yeah.
Let me just remind Mr. Alag that there was a president called Obama. Obama allowed the Arab Spring to play out. They sacrificed their main ally in Egypt. The Saudis were completely upset. It's another matter that it went completely right wing and the Muslim Brothers took it over. But Obama stepped back. He allowed a dictator to be overthrown. He allowed other dictators to be overthrown. And remember also, finally, when he came to India, he sat through the Republic Day. But what is the last speech he gave? Was at Sirifort. To leave the value system completely underscored. So there are presidents and presidents. It's different that President Trump doesn't believe in it. But that doesn't mean that that fundamental issue doesn't arise.
So I'm going to make a slightly counterintuitive point. I think this belief that the United States is out to remake and make democracies in the world is actually a completely delusional perspective. And I'm reaching out to now all of my fellow country folks here on both sides of the political aisle. They do not seek a liberal, plural India whatsoever. You look at the biggest success of United States in Asia in the last 30, 40 years. It's China. They are the biggest contributors to globalization, $600 billion of trade, $200 billion of FDI. Yeah. So they're not at all concerned. Correct. So I think the argument that I'm trying to say is that if we want democracy, pluralism, secularism.
It should be because we want it.
And you're going to have to actually stand against the trend that they will seek to reverse it. Look at our neighbors. Look at Pakistan. Look at the West Asia. So I think let's put that aside because the value base can take you in the opposite. And I think just one point I'll say that I think this idea that we have benefited from American strategic altruism is actually should be flipped on its head. We have been the altruistic power in the last decade, certainly in the last 3-4 years. I think it's time to get some sort of an equilibrium in the terms of this engagement, because if we don't do so, we'll eventually run out of money. It's as simple as that.
So the other big question, Ambassador Meera Shankar, about this visit is, will he utter the K word? Will he talk about mediation again? Nobody knows what President Trump will do. Do you think that he would really, you know, annoy India by raising it?
Utter or tweet?
He could do anything. He may tweet it, he may utter it.
I think
he may respond to a question.
If we look at the occasions on which he has uttered it, the trigger has been Prime Minister Imran Khan.
Yeah.
So one would hope that given the absence of Prime Minister Imran Khan from the scene here, that it may not be one of his recurring obsessions which he tweets about or talks about, irrespective of the policy statements emerging out of his establishment, which makes it quite clear that they they do not see a role for themselves unless both parties want. And I think if you've seen some of President Trump's subsequent statements, he's tried to kind of, add this little modification, but with some degree of ambivalence. One would hope that coming to India, he, enjoys himself at the stadium in Motera, and that takes
the edge off any
ideas of
talk.
Mediation.
But,
out
I have,
of
a,
his
I have
mind.
A count. I have a different question, which is that Sohasini, even if he does talk about it, you know, India's position on mediation is very clear. Do you still think it would rankle in the Indian establishment if he was to raise the K word?
Well, you know, a lot of what Mr. Trump says has been managed in the past. Remember, he said several things during his meeting with Prime Minister Modi in September at the United Nations as well. That could rankle the things that Mr. Trump says about trade and India being the biggest tariff king and all the rest of that also do rankle. But I think the Indian establishment has chosen now to really not react to any of these things. And in that, sending the message that, you know, there's not much we can do about what comes out of Mr. Trump's mouth, but we will stick to our guns, we will stick to our positions. To the extent that Mr. Trump can be convinced to say the right things and not to say something publicly, I do think that they will gloss over any departures, if you like, from what is normally, you know, said by presidents when they're over here.
I do think that
Mr. Trump has been more.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I do want to say, Nidhi, that Mr. Trump has been more consistent than we give him credit for.
Correct.
You know, he spoke about mediating between India and Pakistan and giving India this role in the region before he even became president. If he is today pulling out of Afghanistan and, you know, they have gone into this talks with the Taliban, it has been despite his establishment. And on each of these issues, North Korea as well, what I will say is he may not be successful, but Mr. Trump has very consistently made the point. After all, India had reacted so strongly last year when he spoke about Kashmir mediation. In fact, some think that the entire 370 move was because Mr. Trump made that statement with Imran Khan. But he has made it 3 times since then. He just spoke at Davos and again said the thing about mediation that the Indian establishment does not like to hear.
Yeah,
so I think he has been consistent.
He may still say it. Do you think he has a mediation obsession, Ambassador Singh? And how does that link up then with Afghanistan?
We will have to learn to deal with it.
Yeah.
Justice.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, so Hasni is right that we just have to learn to deal, and we have. Huh?
He thinks he's a great deal maker. Although his North Korean deal has come apart, we don't know how his Afghan deal goes. His Palestinian deal is dead on arrival. So he's not a great deal maker. But he fancies himself, and his books have talked about it. It is like a commercial thing, you know, that he goes in there and is a great deal maker. And that's why he thinks this is one great deal to make.
I think something intractable attracts him precisely for this.
And he has this fixation on a Nobel Prize.
So, Sameer, when you're back here on the 25th, I don't know what we're going to be talking about. Let me get quick final comments. Raymond Vickery, do you believe that this visit for Donald Trump, what's in it for him? I mean, he, I think, ultimately thinks about what's in it for him. And is it that he's trying to pander to the Hindu American constituency? Are they really that big a constituency for him to pander to? What do you think?
Listen, this is an election year in the United States, and President Trump is focused on showing that he is the greatest president that's ever been, and he will be able to show it by re-election. And so the Indian American community is very important, and it is completely outsized from its numbers by its political activism, the economic wherewithal of Indian Americans, and contributions. So that is a fundamental part of it. This, in some sense, is a counterpoint to what happened in September. Howdy Modi. And he didn't come down there to try to cement trade relations or to cement what happens in terms of economics or security. He came down there for the purpose of getting himself in a position to be reelected. And that is a basic driver in terms of what is going on here. In my view, it would have been better not to do this in an election year in a very highly attenuated kind of atmosphere in the United States. Nevertheless, we have what we have, and what we should try to do is to keep a focus on all of the components of the relationship of in terms of security, in terms of economics. Really, both of these leaders are protectionists. If you look at what happened in the budget this year in terms of tariffs raised in the U.S., if you look at the continuing kinds of activities of Trump in terms of taking on India as somehow an outlier in terms of international trade, there's a lot to be done. And on values, it is important. And people can say, well, the United States doesn't live up to its values. And that is true in many, many cases. But if you look at its strongest and oldest security relationships with the United Kingdom, with NATO, with if you look at its history in terms of what it's done in World War II, the values have played a role. Now, they are not exclusive. But to say that we're going to have the relationship between the two greatest democracies in the world without addressing values is just wrong. And I do agree that you have to look at what values are being promoted. And there are values between Modi and Trump which are not in the national interest of either country in terms of what happens overall. One would hope that the values that we have traditionally been able to stress will win the day on that front, and that we will make progress in regard to the economic issues and in regard to the security issues.
Well, I'm afraid I've actually run out of time. I thought that 1 hour might be
India is in an enviably good position. We're in a good position today. We have a protectionist president who has a chance to get re-elected, and we have a socialist contender who is likely to dethrone him. So I think our shared values will continue irrespective of who wins elections in November because of the kind of political nature of America today.
But are more the values or the values of the leaders?
The leaders. Yeah. The good news is that at 5% growth rate or lower, where we are today, I don't think we can be looking at something more ambitious in terms of our economic directions or opening up of our markets or being more ambitious in terms of our
trading.
Which
actually was a very important.
The Chinese slowdown, we needed to
talk about that in some more detail. I'm going to see some of you again next week as well. Thank you to all of you for joining us. Let us see how this visit goes and whether, yes, indeed, there is a Dandiya that takes place. See you again next week. Goodbye.